a lot of you probably know something about podcasting, have heard about it, have listened to podcasts. I've been listening to podcasts for quite a while. I've been doing my own podcast for about 3 years now. And I'm, as of fairly recently, I'm involved in a couple of podcasts. So I'm not going to do something with a full set of detailed slides here. I'm mostly just going to talk about this and show a few demos of a few things. But I did write up a bit of an outline here to just give you a bit of an idea for what I'm going to talk about. And I have some links and references here as well.
Good. It is advertising.
Yeah, definitely. So, podcasting. What is a podcast? Well, it's a little bit tricky to define, but the easiest way is to say that it's downloadable subscription audio. So we've had audio files that you can download for a long time, but what makes something a podcast is that you have a series of audio files that are made available with an RSS feed. RSS 2.0 introduced attachments. So if you have an RSS feed, which is essentially just an XML file that your computer pulls at some interval to see if anything's new, if you have an RSS file that has, say, MP3 attachments with audio in them, then you have a podcast. And I'm saying here audio or media because there are a couple of variations. The most common types of podcasts are MP3 podcasts, but there are also, in some cases, video podcasts, and there are things called enhanced podcasts, which combine audio with still frames and something that becomes a little bit like a slideshow, or if you remember film strips, a little bit like a film strip. Something else that is important to define is a podcatcher. By the way, anyone, if you have questions or want to steer me in any particular direction, go ahead.
Chris, yeah? If you're picking up a streaming audio, there's one certain broadcasting that's way off, and you get a streaming audio across the internet. Is that a podcast?
No, it's not, because that is streaming rather than downloadable. So for podcasts, you're normally downloading a file for each new episode. So usually each new episode is an MP3 file, and the RSS feed tells you which MP3 files you're supposed to go and get.
Yeah. For lay people, I usually describe it as, that aren't familiar with the internet, as like a radio talk show that is digitally available to download off the internet. They seem to be able to get that.
Yes.
It's close, it's not quite.
Yeah. Internet radio show is not a bad approximation. The thing that makes podcasting different is that, unlike radio or streaming audio, you don't have to listen at any one particular time. It's available for you to subscribe and say, I want the next episode. A podcatcher is essentially the client for a podcast. It's an RSS client that knows about podcasts, knows about generally MP3 files, and will keep a list of podcasts that you're subscribing to, and at some regular interval will check all of those podcasts for new episodes, download things that are new. In some cases, it will automatically load things onto a portable MP3 player or send them somewhere, or it may even be running right on a portable MP3 player or on a phone or something like that. And essentially, all the podcatcher is something that knows about RSS, downloading MP3 episodes or audio episodes, things of that type. And you can actually build a podcatcher fairly simply in Perl. I've seen Perl-based podcatchers that are only a couple pages worth of code. In fact, there's actually instructions for doing it in that book, in that book that we're giving away as a door prize. One thing that I also wanted to define here at the beginning as well is the target platforms, because usually when you are generating something audio, in this case, that is for some audience, you want to think about what platforms you're aiming at. And the biggest one, the most obvious one for podcasting, is the MP3 platform, which is essentially any piece of hardware or software that can play MP3s, and it's sort of the lowest common denominator. So you may end up by making different versions of your podcast for different target platforms, and generally the MP3 platform is the target platform that you will always want to support, because it's the one that basically everyone can use. The exception is if you're doing something like video that really isn't suitable for an audio-only platform, then you won't be using the MP3 platform, but otherwise you will be. The Apple platform is also quite a common one now with all of the iPods out there, iPhones, iTunes running on computers, and so on. And Apple was not first to the table in podcasting by any means. They sort of waited it out initially and didn't want to support podcasts specifically, but Apple did come in and add podcasting support to iTunes, which I'll show you a little bit later. And they certainly play MP3-based podcasts, but they also added a couple things. One is the Enhanced Podcast, which is basically audio in an AAC format instead of MP3 that supports being divided into chapters and supports images for each chapter. And they have their own form of video podcast, which is the most common type of video podcast. So a fair number of people do build podcasts for the Apple platform as well. And if you have an audio-only podcast or an enhanced podcast, an Apple platform version of your podcast. And there are lots of podcasts out there where you'll see an enhanced podcast and an MP3 podcast of the same content, just intended for different pieces of hardware and software to play them back. And those are the basic... those things form the basic environment for podcasts: your target platforms, your RSS, and your MP3 formatting. And it's with that that you can move on and start to think about, well, what about creating a podcast? What about doing something of my own? Well, it might seem a little bit pedantic to go into planning and how you plan a podcast, but I think it's worth talking about. And this is something that has been discussed a lot online, both on podcasts about podcasting. Those are sometimes called PAPs. and also in various forums and the like. A lot of people have talked about planning. And one thing that is key is to know what your podcast is about, to be clearly decided on your topic. And if you don't have a topic, if you're going to say, I'm going to do a podcast talking about nothing in particular, just sort of improv, go off the cuff, you can do that. But know that that is what you are planning to do, and that's how you're going to work. What has often been said is that you should podcast about what you know, podcast about something you're passionate about. Because as you continue with a podcast, if it's something that you want to keep doing over time, you want it to be something that you're really interested in, that you will keep looking at more information and more things to talk about within your topic, and that you will always be interested in it. And the other thing is to think about your format and your team. It is most common to have more than one person on a podcast, and that can be with several people in remote locations. That's usually done over Skype. There are other tools available as well. But doing it with Skype seems to work very well. People do that with teams of two, with teams of five or six, even larger. It works quite well. And people also do things with teams in the same room, which tends to be a little easier to do because you can maintain eye contact quite easily, which is harder to do with remote tools. And there are also people who podcast solo. That is not something that is easy to do. You need very good speaking skills to do that. I wrote up a little chart here just because it's easier to show it rather than explaining it. You have in the left column here, I was thinking about different topics for podcasts and how you format them, and the idea that some people will go completely improvised and have, you know, the sort of water cooler chat kind of podcast, and some people will say, okay, we have a topic for the podcast as a whole, or a topic for this episode in particular, and we'll still go sort of off the cuff, but talk about that topic, or at least try to stay on topic. And then other people will go with an outline, sort of step by step, what are the different points you want to cover in each episode of a podcast. That's what I do for my primary podcast, and it works quite well. And some people will go completely scripted, where you have a word-for-word script of what you're going to read out. And what most people find is that if you're doing a solo podcast, you probably want to go in a scripted format. If you're going completely improvised with a solo podcast, you basically need the speaking skills of either a radio announcer or a stand-up comic. It's really hard to do that. And as you go to a more structured way of planning the podcast in each episode, it becomes easier to do. And as you add more people to your team or go from a remote kind of situation with different people across the net to different people in person, it becomes easier. And usually here when I'm talking about things being easy or difficult or very difficult, it's a question of how good your speaking skills need to be for you to be successful. So there are a lot of people who do sort of water cooler talk type podcasts, not talking about anything in particular in many cases, but just sort of going by banter and that kind of thing. And generally, the successful podcasts that do that have a team of three or four people all in the same place in person. And things sort of divide in that way. So if you're going in that sort of improvised way, you probably want to be scripted. If you have a team that's sort of done online with people across the net, you probably either want fairly clearly defined topics or you want an outline. If you're going solo, you probably want to be scripted. It's that general sort of idea. And there are lots of variations. There are people who are successful in just about every one of these categories. And as I've sort of suggested here, most of these things are going to be primarily your podcast hosts talking. There are exceptions to that. There are people doing music podcasts where they're sort of acting like DJs with so-called pod-safe music or public domain music, which is both of those are available. There are people doing things like that. And there are a variety of things that you can do. I think that is most of what I want to talk about as far as planning goes and as far as platforms and definitions and things. Is there anything that didn't make sense there or anything that I'm missing people want to hear? No?
What okay. would you call this yep. talk, scripted or...?
I would call this, I would call this outlined.
Okay.
And type of outline that I use for my podcast is a little more detailed than this. I probably should have brought a copy of an outline. I didn't do that. But, using outlines can be very convenient, especially when you're talking over Skype with no video connection between you, which is what I do, because then it makes it easier for each host to know when to come in. If you're in the same place and you have eye contact, it's very natural to know when you have an opportunity to start speaking. If you're online, it's a little harder. It's certainly doable without an outline, and my secondary podcast, that's what we do. We do sort of improvised on topic with sort of 3 to 5 people connected via Skype, audio only.
Yep. Can you tell us what your podcasts are?
Absolutely.
Well, you're going to anyway.
Absolutely. I am the co-host and producer of British Invaders, which is the podcast all about British science fiction television. And I will be playing you a couple little bits and pieces from that. And that I'm heavily involved with. There are two of us who are part of it, who are hosting, who are speaking on it. We sort of collaboratively develop our outlines. My co-host, Eamon, who is located in England, usually writes a first draft of an outline, which I tend to sort of look at and revise. We do a conversation over Skype, which we record, and I'm the one who edits that and turns it into a produced podcast, and I'll tell you some more details about how that works as well.
What are the topics?
The topics are different... British science fiction, fantasy, and horror TV series, TV miniseries, and TV movies. We normally do a 2-part discussion, which we record in one shot and then release as 2 episodes. So, for example, we recently did a discussion about a TV miniseries called October with a K, which was from 1998. We recorded the entire discussion in one session, and I have now edited and released the first half of that. The second half, I still have the recording sitting on my hard drive at home, and that has not yet been edited or released, even though it has been recorded.
Once every couple of weeks?
We release once every 2 weeks. So we have a new topic once every 4 weeks, and we do a 2-part discussion. They come out once every 2 weeks.
What number are you up to now?
We released episodes 71, and 72 is in the pipe. Yes?
How many subscribers do you have?
Subscribers is a little hard to say. Downloads are varying from episode to episode over time. It's in the 300 range, give or take. Most podcasts, it's fairly easy to get a fair number of subscribers to get into the 150-200 range. You don't have to be that well known or that well promoted. The main thing is that you have to be putting out episodes regularly. If you put out episodes usually at least once every 2 weeks, normally you will get people subscribing and listening to that. There are podcasts on more erratic schedules, more frequent schedules. There are some successful podcasts that release infrequently, but those are usually ones where the podcast hosts are also doing another more frequent podcast, so they're sort of attached to something larger and more frequent. I am also a member of the team for Milk Carton TV, which is also about television programs. It's about TV series that are no longer running and did not get as long a run as they should have. Missing Children on Milk Cartons is the concept there. And I don't run that podcast. I'm not doing the editing or any of the post-production. And I'm not on every episode, but I am on some of the roundtable discussions. And that one has all kinds of things that they do in it for episodes. So Knight Rider 2008 is the next show for that. And the API, Active Preview Impressions, that's one of the many types of episodes on Milk Carton TV. That is like a brief, 10 or 15 minute introduction. A full episode, like this one on Kolchak the Night Stalker, the original version, is a little longer, and in that case they had four people on there. And that was the third roundtable. There was we did one bad movie night, which was one of the members of the regular team, Jen, or actually two, Jen and Kurt are married. They basically sat a bunch of people down watching a bad movie, had a little portable recorder there, and recorded people's comments about it as they went. Was not bad, kind of amusing. There was an API for that as well. The 11th Hour UK version, I was on that guy. There was a feedback special, so yet another kind of episode they have in there. Whedon Weekends, talking about Joss Whedon shows. Dollhouse had a rather long roundtable, so that was split into two parts. So that's what they do on that. British Invaders has been going for longer. It's about 3 years now. And we have, as I say, our episodes divided into two parts, going roughly every 2 weeks. And just once I have it here to show you, we have... download links over here. There is also a built-in player, this will come out of the little speakers of the... this is coming out of the little speakers of the player here, but it is playing. I'll play you more when it's through the our bigger speakers and you can hear it a little better. But that is what that one looks like. Now, recording. The biggest question with recording is always, what type of hardware are you going to use? And generally, the built-in sound card and built-in microphone on your computer shouldn't be used for anything except maybe a Skype call. They're generally built-in audio on computers is not a great option for podcasting. The most common way of doing things, is with a USB device, and there are a number of those in different categories. There are USB microphones, which I don't have one here, but you've probably seen USB microphones around. There are quite a few of varying types. That is not one. But okay. Close. USB headsets are very popular. If you are doing a solo podcast, or if you're doing a podcast with different people in different locations, so you're the only one recording in your location, a USB headset is probably the least expensive way to do it with reasonably good quality. There are also standalone recorders like the one that I'm using now. There are input devices that connect with USB or FireWire that are essentially external sound cards. This is an example of one of those. This is a PreSonus Inspire 1394 FireWire recorder. It has ports on it for two microphones and, two XLR microphone inputs. Those are these three-pin things here. And two quarter-inch inputs, which can be used for microphones. They can also be used for instruments, for things like electric guitars or guitars with pickups, if you're using it for music rather than for speech. This has outputs as well for headphones and different types of things. It connects directly to a computer with FireWire. There are similar things for USB as well. Of course, going a step up, there are mixers, which allow you to have any number of inputs, often going up to 8 or 16 or 24 or even more. And they work well for larger groups of people. Many podcasters will tell you that even just for one person, having a mixer is a big advantage, because that allows you to do some different types of things with mixing and some different types of things with different pieces of hardware. So going to BSWUSA.com is an American hardware vendor. They're sort of like Tiger Direct or NCIX, but for audio recording equipment. I refer to them a lot. I have bought from them. This is the Behr MMX2 USB headset, and it runs for about $100 US, and it is a great headset for recording for podcasts. My co-host in England for British Invaders records with one of these. And Behr is a company that you may not have come across, but they have a reputation in the audio recording industry, especially for headsets and things like headsets. They're most of them, the non-USB ones, are a fair bit more expensive. But they tend to make a lot of the headsets that sportscasters use, and sometimes radio DJs and that sort of thing. And if there is any circumstance where you need to record one person's voice in a noisy environment, it's for sportscasters. They have about as noisy an environment as anyone. So this type of headset is nice for recording in an environment where you don't have complete control of your noise. I record with a head-mounted mic, this guy. And again, the head-mounted setup is nice because it's good for recording your voice and not recording too much of anything else. When I was recording with a standalone mic on a mic stand, I found I was recording too much of the noise from my computer. And being that the computer is an iMac with all of the innards of the computer bolted to the back of the monitor, there was no practical way of me moving the computer further away. So that's what the headset type of thing looks like. If you're using a standalone recorder like the one I have recording right now, this guy sitting on the little tripod here is a Zoom H4N. Runs for about $300 US with a small discount and shipping and so on. I got mine for about $325 after everything. You can buy them locally for about 360 or 370 Canadian. And this is, it's a very nice device, actually. BSW may have a better photo of it, actually. Now these guys, that picture is the same as what this guy over here is. It has two built-in microphones for recording stereo. They point in a cross pattern, and it's very good for recording anything that happens to be going on in the immediate vicinity. If you are recording a podcast with several people in the same place, so, you know, a bunch of people sitting around a table, something like that, this is a good way to do it, and probably the least expensive way to do it. The fancier way to do that would be with a mixer and one microphone for each person, which is certainly doable and works very well, but it adds up in cost a little bit. This guy, in case anyone is interested, it has two XLR mic inputs that can also be used as quarter-inch mic inputs or instrument inputs on the bass, and it can record four channels simultaneously with the built-in mics and the inputs. It can record in regular two-channel stereo, which is what most people want to do. It can go into high-quality 96 kilohertz audio. It can record multi-track with recording four channels, recording them one at a time. It's really a very capable unit. A lot of professional musicians use them. People doing, you know, nature field recording for bird songs and things like that use them. It has the advantage for that kind of thing that you can plug a pair of headphones into them and listen to what you're recording as a monitor. So people doing things like nature recording will have a specialized microphone plugged into this and a pair of headphones and work with it that way. So you can do a lot with one of these. It's really very capable. There are several different brands who make these kinds of things. Yamaha has them, Tascam has them. Yes.
Is it just recording onto flash memory?
It records onto an SD card. Okay. That's the most common way. It also has a USB port, so you can use it as an interface if you want to. You can plug it into your computer with USB and record from the built-in mics or from the mic inputs. And it then becomes just like a regular interface. You can also put it into a mode to use it just as an SD reader for your computer. So you can upload your recordings, or I think basically any file from an SD card, you can upload to your computer directly that way. Very capable little device. And while I'm at it, I'll also show the little brother of that is the Zoom H2, which is a similar idea. Quite a bit less expensive, so $141 rather than $300. And similar idea, just a more basic unit, more basic microphones, everything built into it is just a little more stripped down and a little lower quality than the H4N. But again, very capable device. People use both of these models for roaming around and doing interviews with people. You know, podcasters who do interviews for their podcasts will often carry one of these. People will use them for all sorts of things, ranging from recording concerts and rehearsals for musical groups to, like I said, nature recording. Recording concerts with them is quite common, and podcasters use them a lot. Yes, it does. This one actually, oddly enough, the lower end one has four built-in microphones rather than two, and it will do four channels with some limits there.
I mean, when
noticed a noticeable difference between the two units in terms of the quality of the output?
I haven't done a comparison. I only have one of them.
Only the top one.
Yes. If you see a reference to the Zoom H4, that's the previous version of the H4N. Similar, but they did upgrade some things and improved the interface for using it directly on the panel. The interface on that is actually pretty good. It's a little bit like using a BlackBerry. It has a menu button and a dial for scrolling up and down on things. And those work pretty well. I've lost what I was looking for. Here it is. Another option, BSW sells some pretty good packages. This is what you do if you're going for the mixer approach. So that is a mixer that plugs in with USB, so you can record directly to your computer. It, in that case, has four connectors for XLR mics. If you are using a sort of standard audio recording style microphones, you tend to gravitate towards XLR. If you're using a USB microphone, you won't be using that. Do people know what an XLR plug looks like? I can pass this around if anyone wants. That's just an XLR extension cable, and that's what people recording concerts and recording in studios will use. One of the nice things about that is because they're used so much, it's very easy to get long cables, and they're not all that expensive. If you look in the trunk that any professional sound recording engineer carries, he probably has half a dozen 20 or 30 foot cables of that type, and you can plug that in with just about any standard, fairly good microphone. That's what this microphone uses. Both of these devices I have here use XLR devices. They're very common. If you buy a microphone that has a quarter-inch jack on it or a USB jack and the cable for that microphone is detachable, usually the base of that microphone will actually be XLR. And you can often take an inexpensive quarter-inch, like an inexpensive microphone that has a wire right on it with a quarter-inch jack, detach that wire, and put in an XLR cable, and you'll get a better quality signal out of it that way. You can do that with microphones you get from Radio Shack or The Source or what have you. So that is that approach. One thing to warn you about mixers is that often you will see a listing of the number of channels that a mixer can take for inputs, and it does not mean that every channel is capable of taking a microphone. Often you will have a number of inputs that are for other devices like turntables or audio recorders or some other mixing device, various other things. But often you will have an 8 or 12 channel mixer, and only 3 or 4 of those will be for microphones. So that's something that you need to look out for if you're looking for a mixer and want to use it for recording from several microphones. Just so you know, if it's not obvious, recording equipment and recording techniques is a deep and complex enough topic that it could probably support its own user group without much effort. And I showed you an input device sitting here to show you. That's a typical input device. You can't see the ports very well on there. There are two black ports here, which are for XLR plugs like the one I showed you, and they also will take quarter-inch jacks as well. There's a type of plug that does that. That's what the plugs on the base of this recorder here do. So a box like this that plugs into USB is a very common way to do things. And if you want to get just a regular XLR microphone and use it for either one or two people, most of these will support two microphones. If you only have two people and you want individual mics, you can use one of these guys. This is $80. They go usually for significantly less than a mixer would. See if I can find... yeah, this one looks a little... No, that's not a good example. That doesn't let you see much better. That's another example. Can you see the jacks there? I guess you can't really. Okay. Is that going to work on here? Excellent, thank you. So that's just a very quick view of a few recording devices. Any questions about recording equipment? And yes.
I've done a few podcasts and I've kind of hit a challenge that I haven't quite figured out the best way to do yet. But the issue is I do it with Skype
right.
for the people, and it works great. I use a software mixer so that I can mm-hmm. basically have all these streams of Skype going into one virtual audio device, and then that's recorded, right?
Yes.
But what would be nice to do is audio I play on the computer that's recording is heard by me and also heard by the people that are on Skype as well. Can that be done with hardware or software or both?
I would say both. I haven't done that. What platform are you using?
Mac OS.
Okay, then probably what you want is something called SoundFlower, which can...
I've tried that, yeah.
And would that do it, or would that not do it?
It can't do that.
Okay, Audio Hijack Pro then will be the one that probably can. You do have to pay for that. I think it was $20 or something like that. I bought it a long time ago. I used to use that for recording... the podcast itself, I don't now, but I do use it for recording audio clips from DVDs. It is quite powerful. There are a lot of pieces of software for recording recording audio from more or less any kind of device you want to use. But that actually brings up... brings up a point I wasn't going to get to till a little bit later, but seeing you mentioned it, I will. And that's you can do things usually in one of two ways, either with a live mix or a post-production mix. And in a live mix, generally the idea is that what you're hearing at the time when you're recording is as close as possible to what will finally be heard in the podcast. So if you have some intro music, you will play the intro music and then start talking. And if you have some bumpers, as they're sometimes called, things to separate sections of your podcast, you will play the bumper right into your mix and then keep going. If you are doing a live mix and you want to progress further doing that, usually the best way to do it is with a mixer, with a hardware mixer. And that can get to be pretty complex pretty quickly. But the people who do more complex live mixes usually do it with a hardware mixer. And people certainly do that with Skype, and they will do the kinds of things that you're talking about.
I find it hurts the brain after a while when you start... trying to manipulate all your ins and outs and record all that at the same
yeah.
time.
What some people do in order to make that a little bit simpler is to have your bumpers and other things that you're playing not play in your computer, but to use an external device, which could even just be an iPod or something like that, and have your iPod connected into one slot of your mixer. And when you're ready to play something, you just punch it in on the iPod and you have that being mixed into one of your channels. And well, what you could then do is have it does get a little bit complex, but the right way to do that is you have the output of your sound card with the Skype output, so the other person on Skype, going into one slot of your mixer, and an iPod or other player for your bumpers on another slot of your mixer, your own microphone on a third slot of your mixer, and you have outputs coming from that to A, go back into Skype, and B, go into your recording software or recording hardware. If you there are some mixers with built-in recording capability, although that's a little bit specialized. Or you can use a standalone recording device like one of these to record straight off your mixer. So there are a variety of ways you can do that. Zoom does actually have a thing called the something 16, I think, the N16, it's not the H16, that looks like a mixer but has recording capabilities built into it with an SD card. It's inexpensive, and I'm not sure, it's about $400 for a recording mixer, which is very inexpensive, but I'm not sure how good it is. So far, I've heard mixed reviews, where the recorder is the H2, the H4, and the H4N, I've heard very good things about. So there are a variety of things you can do with that. Did people follow that partly? There are lots of things you can do. Things can get complex if you want to make them complex. I do things not with a live mix. I do a post-production mix, which keeps things much simpler when you're recording. But it also it takes up more time in post-production after you've recorded. Recording software, there are lots of things that can record. And your actual recording software, there isn't a lot to say about it. You're just going to choose the right input and hit record. You can do that for free with Audacity, which is a free audio editor. You can do it with just about any audio editor. You can do it with some special recording software like Audio Hijack Pro for the Mac. There are multiple pieces of software for doing that kind of thing for Windows, and I've forgotten what they're called now. Call Graph is sort of specialized for recording Skype calls. I believe it's Windows only. I haven't used it. The Milk Carton TV podcast that I'm on, someone records that with Call Graph.
What do you use? What software do you use?
For recording, I just use QuickTime Pro at my end. Eamon at the other end is using Audacity, I believe. Often when you're recording, there is something to say about recording. If you are recording to your computer, it's best to keep what is running on your computer to a bare minimum, because the stream of audio, depending what you're recording from, can be fairly large. And it can be a lot to process on the fly. It can be a lot to write to the hard disk. If you're recording several channels at a time, more than two, then you want to make sure you have a fast hard disk for that. Most people will say minimum 7200 RPM disk for doing something like that, or SSD. How recording works, it's a lot of it is trial and error. And if you find things are clipping and chopping in and out, that's because your PC isn't keeping up, or you have sort of odd distortions. That's usually because your PC isn't keeping up and you want to run fewer things on it, or keep your recording your recording software and what you're recording to a bare minimum, which is why I use QuickTime Pro, which takes the raw stream and dumps it straight to the hard disk. Now, post-production is a little more interesting, I think, and I'll start to get into some demos with this. What you usually use for that is an audio editor, or some people will call it a DAW, a DAW for Digital Audio Workstation. And the reason is that an audio editor is not just an editor. It will do several things. It will do your post-processing effects, which can be important. That's grayed out, but you can barely tell on there. You have your various effects that are useful. You have your recording, you have your editing, and you have your mixing. And mixing, especially if you do the post-production mix, which I do, is something that is very important. So what I will show here, just to play around with things, is a recording of one side of the conversation from a podcast recording we did recently. Do you want to hear me or the other guy for this? Any votes?
Other guy.
Other guy. Okay. You're hearing me enough. Okay. So I'll let that import. Audacity is one of the few free and open source audio editors. It is available for many platforms, Mac, Windows, and Linux included. And it is it's especially useful because it's highly available. It's very easy to get hold of them, and it's free. Unfortunately, it's kind of limited and not that great in a lot of ways. The situation with audio editors is a little bit like it is with image manipulation. If you think about the sort of programs like Photoshop and things like that being quite expensive, and then the one real free alternative is the GIMP, it's a little bit similar with audio editors, except that unfortunately Audacity is not as well developed and mature as the GIMP. It does have some stability issues and it has some limitations. But it does work, and it is something you can use as your main software for podcasting, and lots of people do. So just playing something straight from Audacity. I should be going through this device and up to the speaker on the projector there. So let's get that a little louder. And that's waiting because I'm speaking on the other recording.
So we have to guess what you're saying?
Yeah. Coming. Can you see you can sort of see the line there. You're about to hit his speech there.
This is Aidan from England. Hello. So yes, we're talking about October, about the story of a young teacher who's going to...
So that's just basic playback in Audacity. Let's try a couple things once we're here. See, I'm going to zoom in to get a better look at things. Usually, not that far. Usually I use a scale about like that. So there isn't that much happening before... I'm not used to have this scrolls.
Part 1.
So we don't really need that bit at the beginning, so let's just select that and delete it. Let's go up to...
Yes, absolutely. There's all sorts of...
So you have sort of typical editing, copy, paste, standard kinds of things. And what you will find you'll want to do is remove some things, because often you'll just have far too much in your recording to actually include in a podcast. And in most situations, certainly over Skype, people aren't quite concise enough. So you usually have flubs, or you have things where people go on a bit too long. You want to cut things down.
Do you ever remove silences?
Absolutely. And I'll get to something for that in a minute, actually. What is particularly useful in Audacity, and this is something I use quite a bit with Audacity, is the set of effects. They're actually pretty good. So I will, for example, change tempo, will change the speed of something without changing the pitch. So let's give a big increase in speed just to demonstrate that. So let's double the speed of that little bit we selected and play this.
Yeah, I think it's all sorts of bad.
So a little bit quick there. However, if we undo that, let's listen to it at regular speed.
Yes, absolutely. There's all sorts of...
And let's...
What does auto duck do?
we don't want to... That is for dropping one track down into the background when another one comes in. So that's for background music. It gets quieter when you start speaking and louder again when you stop, if you have ducking. I'm not a fan of ducking, but it's good for live mixes and things like that. So if we change the tempo by, not zero, but 10%.
Yes, absolutely. There's all sorts of...
We get something that still sounds like a person talking. You're not likely going to notice a big difference. You can go up to, depending, maybe 12 to 15%. Increase. If you start pushing too much past that, it starts to sound unnatural. The consonants in voice start becoming too quick and clipped, and it doesn't sound right. But increasing the speed a little bit for an entire podcast can be useful. It's something I do, actually. And the reason I like it is it just keeps the episodes a little bit shorter, and it keeps the information density high, which is something that I like to do. And the general tendency is that audiences tend to like reasonably short podcasts and tend to prefer a podcast that is shorter and comes out more frequently. So if you record a discussion and you want to include the whole thing in podcasts and your discussion is 3 hours long, you probably don't want to do that in a single episode. You probably want to cut it into several.
How long are your episodes?
They're usually around half an hour. Though we usually range sort of 20 to 40 minutes, sometimes a bit more. It varies what we're doing. Just the way we structure them, our part two episodes tend to be a little longer than our part one episodes. It just works out that way, the way we outline them and structure them.
16 seconds.
Yeah, and that would be for this one. Right. That's the latest one? Yeah, that
part one. Yeah,
yeah, that's for this 16. Guy. So in that case, we went from 32 minutes 45 seconds down to 27 minutes and change, but added a couple clips and things in as well. There is also another effect in here which is very useful: truncate silence, which basically will take any portion of the recording that is silent or is below, in this case, 40 decibels, and reduce the reduce the duration of it. So you get some. So whenever you have a silent pause, if it's a long pause, you get a shorter pause out of it. And that usually, that will take a couple minutes out of the recording, the raw recordings for me, and makes it, it sort of does some of the editing for you. It makes it a little bit, a bit of a quicker pace. So if I run this, we're sitting at 32 minutes 45 right now. This will cut it down a lot because I was talking some of the time, and this is just one side of the recording.
So it should be half, roughly half of your...
Yep. Yeah, 15, that's about right.
That's an interesting statistic. It shows who talks more.
Well, it doesn't necessarily, because you have how long each
talk.
Person pauses
it
in the middle
who
of their speaking.
Talk more.
That's right, yeah. But some of that is when the other person is talking, and some of that is just in pauses between sentences or words that were just a little long.
This is Aidan from England. Hello. So, yes, we're talking about October, about the story of a young teacher who's going to blunder into it.
So if you listen there, it just sort of goes straight through without pauses. And if you tweak the settings on that, it sounds pretty natural and still takes a lot of chunks of things out of there.
I want to kick the other guy off there. You're saying it. I'm going
to edit
a solo podcast.
Do you work on the ers and ums and things like that, or do you let them be?
I take out some of them, and I leave some of them in. Generally, my rule, my approximate rule, is if there's an or an ah that slows the pace of things down, then I will take it out. If it's a quick one, if it's... So we're talking about this series, I'll leave it in. If it's we're talking about this series... Even with the pause removal, it's still... even with the truncate silence, it still is awfully awkward and slows the pace of things. So those ones I will take out.
There's
and it depends.
An automatic on the detector, though, right?
Sadly, no. If you look at some of the results of Google speech to text, you'll see why you don't do it that way. On the Milk Carton TV podcast, we have a feedback line that you can phone that is actually a Google voice line that someone in the States has. So it always comes in with a Google transcription as well. So we've done a number of things where we've played someone's call and then read out the Google transcription, which is usually all over the place, which is kind of interesting.
No training on that person's voice and things like that?
No, it doesn't.
I see.
Okay, now we're back to the beginning. So just to show you how you would do things with the... how you might do things over Skype. I'll just import my channel so we can get both of them in here. When you're recording with Skype or some other remote situation with people in different locations, there are two ways to do it, the double ender and the single ender. The double ender is where you record separately in each location and put the two together. That's what we're doing here.
Oh, quite a difference in gain on the two recordings. Eh?
Yes, there is, and that's just our different recording systems.
Does that always happen? Do you find that always happens, or it varies?
Ever since Eamon upgraded to Windows 7, it happens. And he has everything maxed out, and it didn't happen with Windows XP, and we don't know why. Yeah. Although there was a different problem that was fixed when he went to Windows 7.
Yeah. Fixing one problem always gives you a whole new setup.
So in this case, what we did, we both had local recording software and you know, just on a count of three, started recording, and you have two things recorded locally.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 71.
So this is my side of the recording here.
This is a podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about October. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Aiden from England. Hello. So yes, we're talking about...
That is the absolute raw data we recorded with no processing at all. I didn't do anything to synchronize these except for, you know, we started, we pressed the record buttons at the same time. And that's what you have. That's a dual ender. So you don't get the sound of voice recorded through Skype. If you do a single ender, you can have one person record both sides of the conversation or all sides of the conversation, and you end up with one person in good local, you know, good quality audio, and the other people are not quite as good audio because it's recorded through Skype. Still works reasonably well and quite popular. Some of the people who are into quite sophisticated setups with high quality things will do a series of equalizers and different processing things to the Skype, to the audio recorded over Skype, to make it sound a little bit better and to make it match the local audio a little bit better. But the easier way to get things to sound a little better is to do it with a dual ender, in which case you're looking at doing what is not a live mix, but what is a post mix. That's not what I wanted. So another editor that I'm big on is GarageBand, which I consider to be a much more robust piece of software. It comes with basically every Macintosh system. It's Apple Mac only. And if you want to go to something a little bit more stable and robust, usually you're looking at either GarageBand or buying an editor. If you do buy editing software, probably the most popular thing on Windows is Adobe Audition, and I think the most popular on the Mac is probably Apple's Logic Express, or if you want to go higher end, Logic Pro. I find it's a little better as an editor. It doesn't have all of those plugins for filtering things and the like. But where it is much better than Audacity is for mixing. And I don't know how well you can see this, but this is the intro that we use for British Invaders. And it's actually one of the first things I mixed. It has some problems with it. But basically, this is a series of short clips from different British sci-fi programs that I recorded and got from various places. And what you'll see here, one channel of recording is what's highlighted blue on the left there. So you have one row which is giving you a left-right and sort of a basic track volume indicator and your contents, which you could edit here. There's a little editing gadget down there. And below it is the mix level. And you this guy down here. And the nice thing about a lot of professional mixers and GarageBand is you can set these patterns to say how you want the mix level to change over time. And this is a pretty good example of mixing. What we have here is several clips, each of which has or most of which have a fade in at the beginning. Actually, most of them don't have fade in at the beginning here, but each one has a fade out. So we have what's called crossfading, where each clip is fading out while the others are playing. And we also have a bit of background music there. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But this is what this sounds like, and you'll see the position bar here going through each clip as it goes. So here's the first one. Fades out while the other one comes in. Now one comes in, it starts to fade out. It's fading. It fades out. That comes in. That fades out. And here's the last one, the straight volume.
I am not a number. I am a person.
So that's what a bit of simple mixing looks like. What you should do for something like this that I didn't is keep the overall levels, which you can see by the level indicator here at the bottom. You should keep them... You should keep these guys roughly steady throughout the course of it, which I didn't do, but that would generally be a good idea. Now, something else that's kind of interesting here is what I did for music here, which is very simple. GarageBand and other many other pieces of software come with a set of loops, which are basically just snippets of recordings. So here's a bongo groove. And, you know, if you prefer to have, I don't know, a bit of blues organ, you can have that. And you can, you know, when you buy your software, often you get something like this with it, and you can buy libraries of loops with all kinds of things in them. What I did initially, I tried doing... that's not what I want. Initially, I tried running this with no music at all. So it just sounds like that. And then has the crossfades.
Give priority to the detectors.
And it didn't really hold together. So all I did was I took two loops here. I went to the guitar stuff. And so you have acoustic noodling on guitar. And I chose a couple of those. I think I chose 3 and 18. No, that's not it. Don't have quite enough space for this here. I used
18-1, 18-2,
18-3. Yeah, I used 18 and 7. So, 7. Okay, never mind.
But it was the picking one, not noodling.
Yeah, that's it. And it's just a straight thing that you can just loop over and over. And that's another one. And
it gives basically, continuity, yeah?
Yes, they're meant to be looped. And the interesting thing was just a couple of those gave you something that is okay as background music if you have something over top of it. So you have something like that, just runs like that and then changes a bit at the end. But the most important part of that was this volume curve I have at the bottom. So if... let's do a duplicate track here. Okay. So if we listen to just this guy. Oh, it did that. No kidding. Okay. All right. Maybe I won't do that demonstration. I'll just make the point that if you do the same thing without the volume curve, it sounds awful. It sounds mechanical and repetitive and doesn't sound musical at all. But once you add a volume curve to it, which I just had like a swell, it just gets a little louder in the middle and a little quieter at the end. And that makes it sound sort of like someone playing a guitar. You know, it gives you the feel that you have a bit of music playing there. Maybe not good music, but a bit of something. And you can use those to come up with all sorts of things if you wanted. So that was that's sort of my example of mixing there. I want to show you what one of my actual projects looks like. Don't save. Yes, you can only have one project open at a time in GarageBand, unfortunately. Yeah. Thanks. GarageBand rarely crashes. It's actually true. I very rarely have it crash. But okay, so the thing that we were looking at in Audacity with the two files in it, those are these guys. They have already been sped up a little bit, and they already have the truncate silence run on them. So you have this intro again.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 71. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about October. This is Brian from Canada.
This
is Amy from England. Hello. So yes, we're talking about October, about the story of a young teacher who's going to blunder into an internet.
So, we have things that overlap a bit here, and if you can see here where things were edited because there are separate regions, so...
But he certainly has written a lot, including a couple of...
So there was a little, like a little flub. Started to say something and tripped up a bit or something there.
Sounds
so that's
pretty good. How long did it take you to make that hit end to end like that? Is it easy?
Just to cut that out?
Yeah.
At the beginning, it took a while. Now I can do it pretty quickly. I don't know. One of the rules of thumb is that for how long it takes to edit something, you should take the length of the approximate length of your podcast and multiply it by 4 to 5. Depending what you're doing, sometimes it's more than that. It can be quite time-consuming to do things.
So would it take you more than 15 seconds to pull out something and make it match like that?
Depends what you're pulling out. Often, no.
Yeah, okay.
But just... Here we go. Here is a spot where we included a bumper, something that goes in between things. In this case, a clip from the show we were talking about. And... as you can see, I have a bit of a crossfade here. So you have this region of me speaking and this region of the bumper. They overlap, and I have the bumper starting pretty quietly, minus 14, so that's less than a quarter of the volume of its regular, and then going up to a little bit amplified. So you have that
people who have taken
a bit of mixing going on.
And perhaps some kind of telepathy and so on.
They've been flying night missions.
So it sort of goes like that. And it's the general idea of how things look in GarageBand. Oh, a little slow. Okay. The way that they do the equivalent of those effects in GarageBand is that they do it on entire tracks rather than regions, which is one of the limitations of GarageBand. There are some limitations, but what you get on the whole is pretty impressive for the price. Pretty impressive for something that is of this type and not a very expensive type of thing. So, for example, this is its little speech enhancer, which just pulls out a bit of noise, that kind of thing. And I'm running a gate on here. One of the standard tools you have for filtering audio are gates, which remove anything that's too quiet below a certain threshold, and compressors, which take anything that's too loud and squeeze it in, and expanders, which take things that are too quiet and stretch them out. And those are some of the most common inline effects you can be running that are used to keep the levels at something that is pretty good. And they can be useful, but they can also be a little bit like blunt instruments. There is something else that I want to demo on here. Once we're talking about levels, how much time do I have? Okay.
You're at
okay. All right. Okay. So just a couple more things I'll mention here. This guy is actually the controls for this recording input-out device, input-output FireWire device I have connected up. And let me just cover a few more things in the outline. Distribution of things. You have encoding things to MP3s, which you can do from a lot of different pieces of software. Audacity's MP3 encoding is not very good. You're better off using something like iTunes or GarageBand. RSS, we talked about a little bit already. Most podcasts have sort of a front-facing blog to them that fits in as well. A quite popular way of doing things, if you're doing your own hosting or controlling things on your hosting site, is to run WordPress with a plugin called PodPress, which sets you up for blogging with the Podcasting Incorporated. Libsyn, short for Liberated Syndication, is a service provider specifically for podcasting, which is pretty inexpensive. For about, I think it's $6 a month now, you can get a service that lets you upload 100 megabytes of podcast per month, and the downloads are completely unmetered. And what you upload accumulates over time. So, and it actually has a very easy-to-use interface. So if you want something that's easy to use and you don't want to worry about the distribution side of things, Libsyn takes care of things very well. So we talked about some of these pieces of hardware. I included a few links for some vendors here as well. One thing that I haven't mentioned yet that I'll just mention quickly is Levelator, which is a piece of software that has a very simple interface to it. This is the whole interface. You drag an audio file onto it, and it produces a new audio file with adjusted levels. And so if you think about those compressors, expanders, and gates, things that just sort of stretch things out and squeeze things in terms of level and volume to even things out over the course of your podcast, Levelator is a more sophisticated way of doing things. It's a free, closed-source piece of software, runs on Linux, Windows, and Mac, and it basically adjusts your levels, keeps everything about level, but still allows you to get louder and quieter in a way that sounds pretty natural. So it actually works pretty well. You can use it on your whole podcast, or better still, you can use it with just your voice recordings. If you're doing that post-production mix, you can take your, in my case, two channels. I just put those two channels together as a stereo file, run them through Levelator, and then I'm bringing them back into editors and bringing them into GarageBand. And my levels for speech are basically all taken care of. And for my bumpers and intros and things, I do the levels manually, which to make it work out well and sound good, you really want to do those manually. But for the actual speech, if you're not doing dramatic readings or anything like that, it's pretty good. So I think that covers most of what I wanted to talk about. There is a lot here, obviously. A lot of things you can do with these things. I don't think there is, well, in most respects, there is no wrong way to podcast. You can basically, anything you want to do, produce an MP3 file, send it out in a feed somewhere, and you're good to go. There are better ways of podcasting and worse ways, but most things that you try out will generally work and work out for you.
All right.
Any further questions? Mm-hmm. Have I bored you enough? Mm-hmm.
Do you keep all of your episodes all suddenly up on your site at the same time? Are they all available?
Yes, they are. Normally what you do is the RSS feed, you roll over and keep, you know, the last 10 or 20 in the feed. But your website usually will allow you to go back and look at any episode. And that's typical. That's usually what's done.